The British Prime Minister Starmer has hosted leaders from over a dozen nations, including Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky, at an important meeting in London. This is to discuss the future of Ukraine. Now, this follows the disastrous February 28th Washington meeting where Trump and Zelensky clashed over a war strategy. With France and Germany in tow, they plan now to have drafted or to push through a ceasefire plan. Joining us now to look at this, James Marlow. I'm also joined by Ruslan Bortnik, the director of the Ukrainian Institute of Politics, Tatiana Kokreva, a senior journalist in Moscow. I'm also joined by John Rossomondo, who's a commentator on U.S. national security issues. Thank you all very much for being with us. Mr. Marlow, let me come to you first. Keir Starmer's coalition of the willing, as he phrased it, hinges on a ceasefire plan with France and Ukraine. How viable is this without firm American commitment, given Trump's apparent pivot towards Russia?
Well, it's not just France. It will be a number of the EU countries and possibly some outside of Europe as well. As we speak right now, I'm just looking to my right, and the Prime Minister at this exact moment has now just got onto his feet in the House of Commons, Sir Keir Starmer, and he's just about to announce to a packed House of MPs on all different parties exactly what the plan is and what he is hoping to do, what he's proposing to do, and to bring that proposal back to the White House in Washington, D.C. It'll be something like about how many troops and exactly what type of troops that the British will commit to Ukraine, the Air Force as well, along with the French and perhaps other countries. In terms of who is stronger and can Europe survive without the United States, I don't think we're anywhere near that. Of course, Friday night was a disaster. I think it was a disaster for many reasons. Clearly, from Zelensky's point of view, he's been fighting a war for more than 3 years. He says that more than 700,000 Russian troops alone have been killed. Let's say half of those are Ukrainians. That's another 350,000 plus the civilians, of course, on both sides. And he's tired. He's mentally tired, he's physically tired, and he just played his cards real wrong. And the vice president saw exactly what was taking place, and the president jumped in, and it obviously went disastrous for him. Now Keir Starmer is picking up the pieces. I don't think the Americans are going to drop out, but we'll have to see exactly what the plan is, which is being proposed right now by the prime minister.
Tatiana, how does Moscow see these developments in London?
Well, Vishnu, we'll have to first hear what exactly are they proposing and what exactly is on the table. But from what we've heard so far, you know, until Europe is ready, and specifically Great Britain, is ready to accept its culpability in the conflict itself and stop at least calling us Moscow the aggressor and be ready to actually talk, you know, because you can't. You know, we've discussed this over and over again. On the one hand, they say, yes, we're ready for peace. On the other hand, they're saying, let's punish the aggressor. It doesn't work this way. If we're talking about actual talks and about actual negotiation, there has to be an understanding that there's no one side to a conflict. There are two sides to every conflict. And there are two sides that are usually at fault at this conflict. So the British Prime Minister, whatever he is going to announce, whatever he's going to propose, I don't believe that we're going to hear anything different this time around that we've already heard, that we need to protect the territorial integrity, the sovereignty of Ukraine. And I mean, I'm sorry, this is just not going to work.
Okay. Ruslan Bortnik, let me come to you. You know, Germany has spoken about the need for a strong European army or a strong army for Ukraine post-war, but with European weapons stocks depleted and the industrial capacity of Ukraine to build weapons at scale, certainly at the scale at which America is still capable of doing, without that, how realistic, you know, and how effective can a European armed force or European nations providing more weapons to Ukraine actually be?
It's also a difficult question, but Europe has two tools to help Ukraine. For now, European Union, and not only European countries, but European countries, they have money and they are able to buy this weapon from United States, European money. And the second tool, they have some troops, infantry troops, which could be deployed in the territory of Ukraine, but all, of course, under the support and under the cover of United States. Because European armies are not capable, if we are talking about the air defense, intelligence, and so on, they are not capable to stand against the Russian forces. But in any case, it's a key European interest, the peace in Ukraine and the ending of the war. It's not so key for interest for United States because they have ocean between the conflict. And I think in any case, Europe will be in this deal. Europe has the money and has some troops which could be used in frozen this conflict.
Okay. John Rosamondo, you know, the summit in London seems to have sidestepped Trump's Oval Office clash with Zelensky. Can Europe bridge Kiev and Washington, or is Europe truly in a diplomatic paralysis with America?
Well, one of the biggest problems with Europe is you have over 20 countries that don't all have the same agendas. You have pro-Russian countries such as Hungary and Slovakia. You have Germany, which has been, you know, vacillating since Russia invaded 3 years ago, to the British and the French. So you don't have any sort of a united political front, let alone being able to put together an army. The British army is the weakest it's been in 300 years. The French have been building up their army. However, as Ruslan mentioned, none of the Europeans have an army that's worth anything that could be a real foil for the Russians. So I think that right now it's going to be a real difficulty, and I think that Keir Starmer had best tell Zelensky that Trump's deal is the best that he's going to get right now, because the Russians aren't leaving, and his army isn't strong enough to push them out, nor are the Europeans.
James Marlowe, respond to that. Also, President Macron has floated a one-month truce on air and sea attacks. How would you respond to those who say that this is a half measure that won't really deter Russia or Putin at this stage?
Well, actually, that's Zelensky's problem on this as well, because as he said to the president and the vice president, we've tried this over and over again. This is where the diplomacy went all wrong last Friday night. Trump, of course, kept saying that that was under somebody else. It was under Joe Biden. It was under Obama. And now you've got a different president. But of course, Zelensky wants security guarantees, and he should get those guarantees. Because after all, whatever you say about Ukraine, Ukraine was an independent nation from 1991. Everyone agreed to this, including the Russians. They gave up their nuclear weapons. And what happened was that they were invaded. They were invaded by another country, Russia. And the only reason why they were invaded was because that Putin talked about expanding the Russian Federation. He said the greatest defeat for Russia was the fall of the Soviet Union. And the Baltic states and Poland are very, very concerned right now. Now, what Donald Trump has actually raised for a lot of Europeans, including myself, during his first term in office, was the fact that the Europeans weren't all contributing to what they should be contributing as far as NATO goes. Now, a lot of people didn't know that. He pointed that out. For some reason, all the other presidents didn't want to say anything about this. Now that that has become well-known news, the European countries are mostly stepping up. Right. Now there's a big push on Keir Starmer to go ahead and raise their defense budget up to 2.5%. The leader of the opposition, I believe, is about to call 3%. When that's going to come into effect, I don't know. During the time of the war, it was actually 5%. But because we thought that Russia was one of us as such, we started to drop our defenses. Now things have changed. Most of the Europeans, maybe not all 27 of the EU countries, but most of the Europeans are actually for, they are united. They do believe a strong European defense system is needed against Russia, who is a threat, and they do want to protect Ukraine. And as I said, I don't think the United States are going to completely drop out because they're aware of what's taking place. But one thing to note is that the United States defense budget is around $900 billion a year. Europe is about half of that. So they need to up that. They need to get their defenses right. They need to start cutting back on other budgets. And we need to start preparing. I say we, those in Europe, need to start preparing for their defenses.
Right. Tatiana, do you believe that given the impasse, the fact that, and you know, I mean, that Europe is, and so many nations in Europe are completely opposed to the way Donald Trump has been dealing with Russia, do you believe that if we are talking about a lasting peace or a peace proposal, it would best work if it is a direct conversation between Trump and Putin going forward, perhaps a summit, that's the only way around this?
Vishnu, just judging from what Mr. Marlowe just said, and I'm sorry for the noise, unfortunately,
go ahead. It's all clear. Yeah.
Yes, great. So just judging from what, you know, the previous speaker just mentioned, it is very clear that left-wing Europeans who are, following Democratic Party strategy, they're not ready to talk. You know, we're talking about the fact that they still are refusing to acknowledge that the conflict erupted not because Vladimir Putin decided one day just magically to expand Russia, but because of the NATO expansion that was actually promised to be stopped on multiple occasions,
NATO has never invaded. They've never, ever invaded NATO. NATO is a defense mechanism against the Russians. That all
John,
it is.
John, this is just I never Russian... interrupted you. John, I never interrupted you.
All right, Tatiana,
you.
Please, go ahead. John, I will give you, I will let you reply. Finish your point,
look,
Tatiana. Yeah.
Look, we've been promised that NATO is not going to expand any further, and yet it expanded. It expanded twice the size. And then another point that I would need to raise is that, you talk a good talk, but Europe doesn't have the money to increase that budget. Germany is in deep economic crisis, and that's Europe's leading economy. France is in crisis. In Britain, poverty is soaring. You're out of money, and you're clearly not ready for any type of conversation where Russia is not forced to say sorry or to completely abandon everything it's been fighting for, and that is the safety of Russian-speaking people in eastern Ukraine and Russian-speaking people altogether, our national interests. So unless this is the case, when we can't talk to Europe, it's not ready to talk to us.
All right, Tatiana,
so
hold on a second.
If Donald Trump is ready, then it's the only way. You're very right.
Tatiana, hold on a second. James Marlowe, you wanted to respond? Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, again, point out, just to make sure that it was heard, again, NATO was always a defense mechanism against the Warsaw Pact. The Warsaw Pact fell apart because the Soviet Union fell apart, and everyone was supposed to be friends in those days because Russia was supposed to become a democracy. It's no longer a democracy. If there's any rival to Putin, then, of course, he suddenly dies, or he's suddenly arrested, or he ends up in Europe. He dies in a car accident. So I don't think you can call Russia a democratic country. But let's just get to the main points. The main points are that, of course, if Zelensky wants everything back as normal before 2014, that's clearly not going to happen. He's definitely going to lose Crimea. The Europeans want an end to this war. I think Zelensky wants an end to this war. You can't keep it going. I was somebody who was a great fan and a supporter of Ukraine based against the aggression of Putin. But to have this war going for another 3 years or 5 years, and for the British and the Americans to keep paying that under these circumstances in a very volatile world, it's not going to happen. And I think most people accept this right now. We don't need to say sorry. We don't need to go ahead and shake hands or anything like that. There needs to be a ceasefire. The question is, how is that going to come about? And I think, obviously, the Ukrainians are going to have to give up some type of land,
right,
the Donbass region, the eastern side, certainly Crimea. And then Ukraine needs those guarantees that Russia will not regroup, retrain, reinvade again.
All right, James Marlowe, hold on for a second. Let's bring Ruslan in. Ruslan, is there a growing acceptance or thinking in Ukraine that that the Luhansk and Donetsk region is, you will not be able to regain what you wanted, and you will not be able to regain Crimea. That's the fight that, that Ukraine has always fought for. But if there is to be a peace, then there would have to be something that Ukraine is willing to forfeit. Are you willing to forfeit those territories?
Of course, we are not able to reject from our internationally recognized territory, because it means the crisis entire Ukrainian state. But if we are talking about the peace topic, that could be some scenarios when we are postponing some very hard questions for the peace for some times. I want to remind you the very likely in Moscow-Istanbul agreement, when the Russia was agree even to make a new referendum on Crimea in 20 years. So we have a situation of a choose, of a crossroad, war to peace. But at the same time, of course, Ukrainian people wants to achieve the peace. But at the same time, we need to find the guarantees how to avoid the war in the future, and how to maintain the international law, international balance in the, after this situation. Because if Russia will be able just to capture Ukrainian lands without any consequences for this, it means that no one country in the world, no one people sure. in the world will be safe, will be feeling good.
Okay. John Rosamondo, pull out your crystal ball and gaze into the future for us. Europe and America clearly not speaking the same language. Ukraine caught somewhere in between. Russia isn't saying much. They're basically listening at this stage. What happens next?
Well, I think that now that Zelensky has said that he would sign the minerals deal, we start moving from there. I mean, the Europeans are too divided among themselves to come up with any sort of agreement or to be any sort of a credible partner. As the other speakers have said, Europe's economics are too terrible. I think that you end up having some sort of de facto recognition of the Russian occupation of the parts of Ukraine. I don't think that Europe will recognize the annexation. It could be like the Baltic states between 1940 and 1991, in which the United States never recognized formally the incorporation of the Baltics into the USSR. So it could be something like that.
All right. Well, let's see what happens. Hopefully there is a peace process. That's certainly something that millions in the region would certainly want. The question is how.